Basically, we're going to talk about Choshech. Choshech is the ninth Makkah of the tenth Makkot in Mitzrayim. Arbe, Choshech, Makkat Bechorot. Those are the three Makkot in the parasha Bo. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, you see the pasuk? Nete yadcha al hashamayim. Raise your arm to heaven. Vihi Choshech al Eretz Mitzrayim, and the entire land of Egypt shall be dark, Choshech. And then you have these two difficult words, not difficult in themselves, but difficult to understand what they're about. Vayamesh Choshech. Vayamesh Choshech, it's a mystery. It's a mystery, but there are attempts to deal with the mystery. Right, Vayamesh Choshech. Let's look at Rashi. Rashi says, "V'yachshich aleihem choshech yoter michoshcho shalayla." It was even darker than the darkness of the night. The choshech shalayla ya'amish v'yachshich od. In other words, if you could imagine, I think you imagine like at night, it's not perfectly dark because there's the moon and the stars, so you get a little bit of light. So again, Rashi says, Choshech yoter micheshko shelayla, darker yet than the darkness of the night. V'choshech shelayla ya'amish v'yachshoch od. There's some word, ya'amish, that Rashi says, like last night, right? Emesh. There is a word in Hebrew, right? Emesh, last night, the night of the night. It's very. Rashi is trying to say that it was very dark. It's hard for us to imagine what that darkness was. But as a result of the darkness, the pasuk says, "Vayi choshech, aleretz Mitzrayim, vayamesh choshech." So Rashi says that the words "vayamesh choshech" tell me about the depths of darkness. It wasn't just dark, it was very dark. Okay. Rashi then, let's look at the next pasuk. The next pasuk, pasuk Chavbet, Vayet Moshe et yado al hashamayim, Vayichoshech afeila. A new description. There was Choshech, then Vayamesh Choshech, and now Choshech afeila. And the word afeila is a known word, right? Afeila. It also means darkness, usually. So Choshech afeila means Choshech. Any time in the Torah where you have a duplicated word, like you'd have here, Choshech, Choshech, that would mean very, very Choshech. But we don't know exactly what the difference is between darkness, very darkness, and super very darkness. I mean, it doesn't really mean anything to us because we've never experienced this. The next pasuk, just a few pasukim, pasuk kav gimel, right? V'lo ra'u ish et achiv. Oh, so this is the result of the choshech. Very choshech, super choshech. Lo ra'u ish et achiv. No one saw anybody else, which is not usually true in the darkness that we know. You can recognize people. Right? The Gemara says, it gets clearer during the day. Right? Netzach hamo, alot hashachar is when you could recognize somebody. That's how you know that the day is coming. Lo ra'u ish et achiv, lo kamu ish mitachtav. Shloshet yamim, 3 days. Lo kamu ish mitachtav. I don't know what that means. Lo kamu ish mitachtav. Nobody stood up from where, I guess wherever they were. Shloshet yamim, ulechol b'nei Yisrael hayaor b'moshvotam. Now this will become the most important phrase in these psukim that we're going to learn. So remember it. Ulechol b'nei Yisrael haya or b'moshvotam. So the Makkah, as with other Makkot, was a Makkah on the Egyptians. but the Jews were spared. And not only were they spared, but it says in the Pasuk, L'kol b'nei Yisrael ha'ya'or b'moshvotam. So you have to figure out, you have to think, ha'ya'or b'moshvotam could mean one of two things, two possibilities. One is, it was regular, there was light, like there's always light. The darkness came on the Egyptians, and the Jews remained as they were. Or in the place of the Jew, where the Jews left, there was something new. And that something new is called Or. In other words, I know that the meaning of the word Or is light, but it is also could be true, it could be true that the or of this pasuk refers to something special, not just light that comes from the sun and the moon and or the moon and the stars, not just that, but something beyond that, right, which reminds us of the third pasuk in the Torah, Yom Elokim Yehi Or, right, Yehi Or, God said let there be light, and everybody, a light that had nothing to do with light that had nothing to do with me'orot. Me'orot usually translated luminaries. I don't know what a luminary is, but in French I think it means a bulb, a light bulb. Lumière. So, oh, you're still French? Okay, that's good. So the light of Pasuk Gimel in Bereishit, right? Pasuk Al Bereishit L'Mishayim Da'aretz. Pasuk Beis Ba'aretz Hayta Tohu V'Bohu, Pasuk Gimel, Vayomer Elokim Yehi Or. That light that God created on the third day, we wonder about. And Rashi says, that light that was created on the third day did not really stay in the world. It left the world. God said, somehow, that the people were not prepared to live with that light. It was too bright. It was too forceful. It was too whatever light could be. But here, so here, I'm just saying we're reminded of that pasuk, I think legitimately, and that's what the pasuk says, our pasuk, L'chol b'nei Yisrael ha'ya'or b'moshvotam. So remember, or could either be regular, ha'ya'or b'moshvotam, meaning for the Egyptians there was darkness, for the Jews there was regular, or it means that for the Egyptians there was darkness and for the Jews there was special. There was something special called Or. Something special called Or. We are here. You're supposed to read the signs, Doctor.
I see, but the arrow pointed that way.
Not the arrow. They said read the sign. They don't say read the arrow.
That's what they call it.
Ah, okay. So anyway, that's why Hayah'or b'moshvotam. Hayah'or b'moshvotam. Okay. If you look back in Rashi, if you look at Pasuk Kaf Bet, Chasuk Rabbe, Yichoshek Afeila Shaloshet Yamim, Chochshech Shel Ofel, Shelo Ra'u Ish Et Achiv Otan Shloshet Yamim. He says, during the first 3 days, no one could see anything. No one saw, they couldn't see each other. Ve'ot Shloshet Yamim Achirim, Chochshech Muchpal Al Zeh. Right? And then, so there were 3 days and there were 3 days. There were 3 days at the end of Pasuk Kaf Bet and another 3 days in Pasuk Kaf Gimel. So that's what Rashi says. He says there were 3 days and there were another 3 days. That's how Rashi explains, understands the Pasukim and the use of these words. But then Rashi says, Ba'ol Shloshet Yamim Acharim, there were another 3 days. Choshech Muchpal Al Zeh. I mean, first Choshech, you couldn't see anything. The second Choshech was even worse. Right? Muchpal al zeh, shelo kamu ish mitachtav. That's when no one was able to get up and to kind of relate to each other. They just stood fixed in their place. Yoshev en yechol amod v'omed amod en yechol liyashev. So Rashi is tricking us here. He's a commentary, but he's not helping me. What do you mean? Omed lo yechol hashevet v'yoshev lo yechol amod. What does that mean? How could darkness affect a person in that way? Oh, I know. I mean, I suppose there's some psychological problem that a person has if he really can't see anything at all. But Rashi doesn't help me. Akshav. Rashi realizes that basically he's stuck. Rashi knows that he has not given us enough information about Choshech to make it meaningful. So Rashi says the following. If you look at the Rashi says, Lama hevi alehem Choshech. Why did God bring Choshech upon Mitzrayim? Lama hevi alehem Choshech. Shehayu b'Yisrael boto hador Rishaim. Amongst the Jews in Egypt, there were Rishaim. Rishaim, bad people. V'lo hayu rotzim latzeit. And these Rishaim did not want to leave the country. That is to say, to leave Mitzrayim. Right? Lo yirotzim latzeit. Umeitu b'shloshet yimei afela. And they died during the first 3 days of darkness. Kidei shelo yiru Mitzrayim b'mapalatam. V'yomru avheim lokim kamoni. And then the Egyptians would say, oh, the Jews are also being punished. And if the Jews are also being punished, then we don't have to be nervous about the fact that we're being punished. We don't have to respond because it's just something mad that's going on in heaven. Yomru avheim lokim kamoni. Nu. So according to this Rashi, Rashi is explaining the whole thing. Right? He explained everything. He said, well, what God wanted to do was make sure that the bad guys of the Jewish people should be killed without anybody noticing it. Nobody will notice it, so they'll be punished, they'll receive their punishment, the death penalty, for not being willing to leave, Mitzrayim. Hi. They're not willing to leave Mitzrayim. And I'm only a little confused.
And we have a shared next room with it outside door as well.
Now I'm not confused. That's not what I was confused about. So I'm still confused. This is, I understand. Rashi told us that there was darkness in Mitzrayim. The Pasuk says that there was or for Bnei Yisrael. Then Rashi says, well, the darkness in Mitzrayim is really not relevant. It's only incidental that there was darkness in Mitzrayim in order that they should not see what was going on in Yisrael. And what was going on in Yisrael, people were dying. People were dying. It was a reverse makkah. It's the only makkah in which the Jews are punished and the Egyptians are kind of kept out of it. They kept separate. That's what Rashi says. This is a pretty remarkable position. I know that Rashi gets it from the Medrash. But I know that. But it's still remarkable. V'od. Kidei shelo yiru Mitzrayim b'mapalatam. V'yomru avheim lokim kamonu. V'od. Furthermore, Rashi said. Furthermore. Going along the same theme. What is the same theme? That the Choshech doesn't really have anything to do with the Egyptians. It only has to do with the Jews. And Rashi comes up with this remarkable idea. Ready? Remarkable idea. V'od, Shechipsu Yisrael v'ra'u et kleihem. That this enabled Bnei Yisrael. How did they do it? I don't know. They to go run around amongst the Egyptians and check where the silverware breakfront was. You know, if you look at the advertisements in those magazines, every Jewish home has one with a lot of silver things in it. And so they went around and they cataloged all the stuff that the Egyptians had. right? Kshiyatzu, when they left Egypt, they would ask them, where's the stuff? We want you to give it to us, because that was part of the promise that God made to Avram Avinu, that they would inherit all of this stuff. The Egyptians say, we don't have anything like that. We don't have a break front, and we don't have candles, and we don't have bechers, and we don't have all that kind of stuff that Jews have. So this tricky little Jew, he said, I have a little catalog that I made. Everything in your house and everything where everything is, we want it now. So according to Rashi, Rashi has two different reasons that the Makkah of Choshech is about Am Yisrael. Yes, it was dark for the Egyptians, but not because they did anything, and not because they were being punished about something, but it was simply a matter of tzniut. Tzniut meaning you didn't want the Egyptians to see the situation that the Jews were in. And what was the situation that the Jews were in? That some of them were going to die, because they didn't want to leave Mitzrayim. So by implication, what Rashi is telling us is about Yitziat Mitzrayim. As I think I mentioned last time, Rashi is saying it very clearly, that the Makot in Mitzrayim were for the Jews. Every single one of them were for the Jews. And what did they accomplish, supposedly? They were able to remake a people that was enslaved in Egypt, and probably not worthy, for whatever reason. Chazal say that they were deeply involved with idolatry. But that maybe Chazal mean, if you're in that kind of situation, that you're enslaved in a country where everybody around you is an idolater, it's very hard to ignore all of that and not be influenced and not accept some of the principles you see around you. So that the period of time of Yikul, which we call Yitziat Mitzrayim, the time that it took from the first Makot until Makat Bechorot, all of that time was an investment by heaven in educating the Jewish people and preparing them to receive the Torah. Because, you know, as the Maharal said, you know, you can't just receive the Torah. You have to be ready to receive the Torah. By that he means, you know, like if somebody gave me a book to read in Chinese, he would not have given me anything, because I can't read Chinese. So I got nothing. You have to be able to use the gift. We have to be able to be the appropriate recipient of the gift. So B'nai Yisrael had to be the appropriate recipients of the gift of Torah. In order, the first thing that they had to do in order to be the appropriate recipients of the gift of the Torah was they had to necessarily be certain that the promise that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made to Avram Avinu would be fulfilled. We call that bitachon. Bitachon, there's no way to prove it. There's no way to know it. But they had absolute confidence. They had to have absolute confidence that Yitziat Mitzrayim was real, was really happening, that they were really going to leave. And that's why every time Paro said no, B'nai Yisrael were confronted again with that question, is it happening or is it not happening? Even though they wanted to believe that it was happening, I can imagine, that it was difficult. That every time Paro said, no, we're not going to let you out of Mitzrayim, no matter what. And in this parasha, the Arbeh, there was the greatest attack of Arbeh in history, came upon the Egyptians. Now, you know that Arbeh is something that happens even today. From time to time, you could see it. Or you could, like a Discovery Channel, you just do Arbeh, and it'll show you great pictures of an Arbeh. But they come, sometimes they even make it to Israel. even though there's no reason, because they have a lot of good stuff to eat in Egypt, but they sometimes they get blown in into Israel, and it's a real problem. The Arba is something terrible. So if you had more of them than you ever had before, then the crop is gone. Everything that's growing is gone. So they had to understand Arba, the worst possible, the greatest ever, the total destruction of everything edible in Egypt. And Paro said no. Paro said no. So there's a question about Paro, right? As we always say, there's a question about Paro. Where did he get the strength? I mean, it's true that the Pasuk says, Ki ani echbadati et libo, that God hardened his heart. But what did Paro say to Paro? Paro stayed there before Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu said, let them out. And Paro says, no. Well, how did Paro to himself justify his obstinacy? I mean, how did he do that? What was what was the source of his power? Well, the source of his power must have been that he didn't believe in the promise, that he didn't think that anything would happen, that he thought at every stage of the way that it was over. This was the most. Moshe Rabbeinu could never do anything worse than he's already done to us. And if he can't do anything worse than he's already done to us, there's no way that I'm going to let them go. So that's what happened in Arba. And then along came Choshech. And the Chiddush in Choshech is that Paro is really not involved, as we will see. Paro is not really involved.
But if they couldn't stand and they couldn't sit for 3 days, then he must have been involved, right?
Yeah, they were involved, but after the 3 days and after the 6 days, everything came back to normal. After the Arba, there was no normalcy that you came back to. I mean, I understand that you're right, that the description in the Pasuk is very severe. Something bad happened. But it could be. It could be that something bad happened to the Egyptians, but it also could be that it was about the Jews, what was happening. I mean, both of these two kinds of ways of looking at it don't cancel each other out. And they're actually fine.
Talking over the language here, it says that the social Yemea Feilah, the Egyptians would not see the Mapalash of the Jews.
Right.
And they will say that they're getting hit just like we are.
Right.
If it's so dark that they can't do anything, how can they see what's happening to the Jews?
No, that's why it was dark. It was, if it would not have been dark and the Jews would be dying,
then they would say it.
So then they would say that. They'd be fortified.
Dark, so they wouldn't see.
Well, they would see that. They would see that.
Listen, afterward, they'd see the body.
Okay. More. Okay. I will just mention another pasuk, which is probably relevant. You see, under the Rashi, Shemot Perek Yud Aleph Pasuk Dalet, Vayomer Moshe Ko Amar Hashem, Kachatzot Halayla, Ani Yotzei B'Toch Mitzrayim. This is the introduction to Makat Bechorot. That Makat Bechorot, right, the murder or the killing of the firstborn, took place when? Chatzot Halayla. Chatzot Halayla is the middle of the night. The middle of the night. I mean, which is usually around 12 o'clock, you know, the way we tell time. Because there are shorter nights and longer nights, but the middle is usually that. So the Rashi says, "Ba'amdo lefnei paro nemra lo nevua zo, sharei mi sheyatzav lefanav lo hosif ru'ot panav." Kechatzot ha'layla. That's what I'm interested in. Kehachelek ha'layla. The middle of the night. Kechatzot. It says in the pasuk, like chatzot, kimo ka'alot. Right. He says that's what kechatzot means. It means in the middle. Zeu pshutol liyashvo lofanav She'ein chatzot she'ein davar shel chetzi. It doesn't do with half. It means the middle of something. Rabotenu darshu, this is the part that interests me. Rabotenu darshu, kimo bechatzi halayla ve'amru. Rabotenu said that even if it says kechatzot or kachatzot, kehachatzot, in the middle of the night, she'amar Moshe kachatzot demashma samuchlo, o lefanav o lacharav. That it doesn't mean exactly the middle of the night, but it means about, we would say in English, about the middle of the night. Not exactly the middle of the night. Why? Right? Velo amar bechatzot, shema yit'u itstagnine paro. Paro had these magicians who were apparently very competent at what they were doing. And if Moshe Rabbeinu would have said, bechatzot, exactly at the middle of the night, then they would like try to figure out when the middle of the night is, and they would probably be mistaken at least by a few minutes, and therefore they would come to the conclusion that Moshe Rabbeinu was wrong. It didn't happen in the exactly when he said the Yomru Moshe Badayhu, and they would use that as a proof with which they could say that Moshe was a liar. So you see, until the very end, again, you see until the very end, the Tztagninim and Paro and his entourage and all the people with him are sticking to their guns, meaning that they refuse to admit that they are part of the divine plan. They refuse to believe that. You know, there's this argument between Yosef and his brothers. You know Yosef and his brothers? When Yosef says to his brothers, I'm Yosef. I'm Yosef. What do the brothers say? They say, oy vey, we're really in a bad situation. Why are we in a bad situation? Because Yosef is going to, he'll punish us. And we sold him. We weren't nice to him. That's what the brothers say. What does Yosef say? It had nothing to do with you. God sent me here, and I was supposed to do this job, and I'm supposed to become the second in command in Egypt, and I'm supposed to feed all the people. So don't worry about it. He said to his brothers. The brothers, they say, but b'chol zot, we did it. We did something wrong. And this is the first discussion that philosophy has about the purposefulness of history. Does history mean anything? Are we going someplace? Is what happened supposed to happen or not supposed to happen? And so this was again the point that the Egyptian made. It doesn't matter. It didn't matter to the Egyptians how powerful Moshe was, or the God that Moshe Rabbeinu represented was. It didn't matter. If they could find even a tiniest opening which would enable them to say, Moshe's God is not perfect, doesn't know everything, he's not really on top of everything, then all the questions are answered as far as the Egyptians are concerned. Yes, they're suffering, but ultimately, they'll win, the Egyptians thought. Because all they do is hang in there, and sooner or later, all this will come to an end. All of this will come to an end. And it's even true that after Makat Bechorot, right, Shmos V'era Bo, the next parasha, is Beshalach. What's the amazing thing about Beshalach? Well, it's about Egyptians. It's about the Egyptians that ran after the Jews. After Makat Bechorot, which was preceded by Choshen, which was preceded by Arbeh, it's hard to fathom how people could be so obstinate. But they were obstinate. They were being obstinate about their way of life, about things that they believed, about things that they could not conceive of, that there would be one God who would be the God of the world, that would be in charge of history, ongoing history. They couldn't believe any of that. They had no way to absorb it. And therefore they felt the opposite about Makat Bechorot. They're gone. It's over. They can't do anything else to us. There's nothing that could happen to us. And so they got their chariots and horses and ran after the Jews. And they were so fearsome. They were so fearsome that you said that the Jews were in total fear of the Egyptians who were bearing down on them. Until HaKadosh Baruch had to say to Moshe Rabbeinu, Ma titzak elai, daber b'nei Yisrael v'yisau. I said, what are you screaming about? This is a time for action. It's not time for screaming. This is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe Rabbeinu. In other words, like flip it around, the Jews were absolutely convinced for a moment that the Egyptians would be victorious. That the Egyptians would be victorious, even though the Egyptians had to somehow the stubbornness that they exhibited, the belief that they had, the profoundness of the belief that they had that there was no God who was in charge of everything, was a sign to Bnei Yisrael about what their belief should be, how they should respond. Right? Daber Bnei Yisrael v'yisau. You have to be strong. Speak to them. And they will fight against you. So I think, okay. So I want to learn. With you this first Likutei Halachot. This is Rabbi Natan, talking about ideas that come from his Rebbe, Rav Nachman of Breslov. He says things that we have to. That generally we all understand. Al kein ha-geula ha-rishona shehi yitziyat Mitzrayim shekolel kol ha-geula. This is an idea that Rav Nachman also stated, right? Geula rishona, geula, this word came into the world at the time of yitziyat Mitzrayim, redemption, geula, but geula in a physical sense, right? Horizontal motion going from Egypt to Eretz Yisrael. Gula Rishona Shehi Yitziat Mitzrayim Shekolel Kol HaGu'ulot. So this was an idea that Chazal already had. There's this, they say Maaseh Avot Siman Libanim. Right? People who study computers know about this in the olden days. I mean, I never studied computers, but I remember this word path. It was once a word that people who knew computers knew. And that once you put the path into your computer, you could use it again and again and again. And therefore, someplace along the line, this idea came into the world that the Torah doesn't just tell me stories that are interesting or even important. Right? It's more than that. The Torah tells me stories that establish the path for the Jewish people. It's a kind of a genetic aberration. Abraham did it, and then Yitzchak did it, and Yaakov did it. So in this case, we're talking about Yaakov Avinu, Geula Rishona, the first Geula that was created. I mean, of course, Yaakov Avinu, against his immediate interest, went down to Mitzrayim, right? Yosef said, "You got to come to Mitzrayim." And Yaakov didn't want to go. Yaakov thought that he had already been redeemed, right? Because he spent all that time in the house of Laban. Then he came back to Eretz Canaan and he faced off with Esav, and so he was finished. But Yeshev Yaakov, Rashi says, "Bikesh l'shevet b'shalva." He wanted to be quiet. Wanted to finish out his life. Wanted to be in the old age home of Canaan. Oh, great idea! Shehuvi Yitziat Mitzrayim Shekolel Kol HaGeulot, and Yitziat Mitzrayim, according to Rav Nachman, is a model for all the redemptions. You have to remember that the Jews went from Mitzrayim to Canaan, then the Jews went from Bavel back to Eretz Yisrael. Right? You remember that? And then finally, they're going back, maybe. I don't want to tell you what God's doing. But it looks like there are Jews coming back to Eretz Yisrael today. And if you'd make a mistake of thinking that maybe God was involved, it wouldn't be such a terrible mistake. You know, like it would pass here and there. Maybe not everywhere, but here and there it would pass. So he says, Kolel kol ha-ge'ulot, ki kol ha-galuyot michunim b'shei Mitzrayim. K'mo shekatav Rabbeinu Zal, all diasporas are called Mitzrayim. I mean, they're not all in Mitzrayim, but they're all a repeat of Mitzrayim. We get there and we have trouble getting out. That's what a galut is. A galut is, I'm displaced, and for some reason, I can't get myself back to where I came from. There's some reason that I don't even understand myself. Kemosh kadav Rabbeinu Zal b'kom acher, al kein atchila ha-geula b'chatzot ha-layla. And so, you see that pasuk that we just learned, the geula began in the middle of the night. Kemosh katuv, k'chatzot ha-layla, ani yotzei b'toch Mitzrayim, ki. I mean, that's the pasuk that we just learned, right? K'chatzot b'chatzot. You remember? Ani yotzei b'toch Mitzrayim, ki ikar kol ha-geulot. The essence, the essential feature of redemption, b'frat geulat Mitzrayim, haya al yedei b'chinat hanau, and this thing about chatzot, hanemar b'mamar hanau, that means the quoting Rav Nachman in Mamar Dalet, al yedei b'chinat hashgacha, hashgacha means watchfulness, divine watchfulness, that God is in charge. Shem shich Hashem yitbarach misof ha'olam me'alma da'ate, that God, this was not like you had to understand this, because every place else in the world, I mean, this we know from other way, everybody had local, there were local gods. What's a local god? A god that's in charge of me, and I'm in charge of him, or her, whatever it is, right? But there's this idea, you could have a god, and I could have a god, and there's no contradiction there. And along came the Jews, and they said, no, you can't do that. There's only one god. And that one God is the one God for everybody. And if there's one God for everybody, so I'm contradicting. In that way, you're contradicting what people thought. Right? Al b'chinat hanal and emak ma'anal. Al yedei b'chinat hashkecha shemshich Hashem yizbarach misof olam mi'al medate. Ki az, b'yitziat Mitzrayim, ayasidud ha-ma'arachot b'itul ha-teva. Everything went wild. Bitul HaTeva, what does Bitul HaTeva mean? You don't, the natural order, as we kind of fool ourselves to thinking that the world works on its own, according to Rav Nachman. Bitul HaTeva, should I stop? It's a message. Somebody wants to tell us something. Man over machine. Okay, so he says, "Ayedei b'chinat hashgacha shemshich Hashem yitbarach misof olam mi'al medate ki az b'yitziat Mitzrayim." I'm in the fifth line. Hayash idud ha-marachot b'itul ha-teva ki az gila Hashem yitbarach hashgachato ayedei ha-mufteim mufteim Noraim Shasa Az Ubitel HaTeva. So again, what's happening in Yitziat Mitzrayim? Right? There's no way that you can attribute everything that's going on in Yitziat Mitzrayim to any other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's Bitel HaTeva. There's nothing that happens that is normal. Even day and night has been rendered something new, something that never happened before. V'chol z'ayal yedei b'chinat alma da'ate, and this is all because of the world that is to come, meaning that it's predetermined, that somehow there's an end of days to what God wants us to see. V'chol z'ayal yedei b'chinat alma da'ate, key, three lines from the bottom, Bisitra, the Yovla, and the Faku, they come out of the Yovel, the side of Yovel, which is 50 years, the 50-year cycle. Shehu b'chinat chamishim sharei binan. That's equal to, right, in the Kabbalistic lingo, 50 sharei sharim, gates of bina, meaning that there is a wisdom that is acquired. There's a wisdom that you can get to if you do other things. I mean, this was a Kabbalistic idea that if you keep the mitzvot in the proper way, if you look into them in a proper way, you can garner wisdom. What does wisdom mean? What is wisdom? This rendering that you will understand something about the relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and world. You'll understand something about why there are promises in the Torah, and why the fact that the promises will be kept. That's what we call bitachon. That's what we call it. We're certain. There's a certainty about it. And the people in Mitzrayim, that was their problem. Their problem was that they didn't have that certainty, or they had lost the ability. I mean, Yaakov Avinu had it, but slavery knocked it out of them. Slavery knocked it out of them. B'chinat chamishim sharei bina, b'chinat alma da'ate ki yadua. So that's what they were working on. That's what Yitzhak Mitzrayim was about. That's why Geula, redemption, began at midnight. The Hainu Sheshiber et Halayla, Vachoshech, Shehem Bechinat HaTeva, Vigila Hashkecha Be'olam. Broke the night, broke the darkness. The darkness represents the lack of knowledge, the lack of understanding, the lack of comprehension, and the Yitziat Mitzrayim, there's a remez before the last of the Makot, the Makat Bechorot, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was breaking this Choshech, breaking the darkness, enabling people to see what was really going on. And they had to overcome, because slavery is the opposite of redemption. It was, as they came to Mitzrayim, things got worse and worse and worse. They lost their ability. They lost their ability to. So you have this general idea. This general idea, which is Adam HaRishon, right? The Gemara says that when Bnei Yisrael was standing at Har Sinai in order to receive the Torah, right? So they somehow had to achieve a level of purity. We mentioned before, a level of purity which enabled them to be the recipients of the Torah. So this is what the Shem Yishmuel is going to discuss. I don't have time to go through the whole thing, but I want to tell you that after all, God created man, right? Man and woman, they were in Gan Eden, and everything seems to have been great. Along came the snake, and the snake convinced them that they should eat from the Eitz Hada'at Tov V'ra. Right? Eitz Hada'at Tov V'ra. What's an Eitz Hada'at Tov V'ra? If you eat from the tree, you'll see that there is a choice to be made. And one could argue that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted them to be able to. I mean, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu put the tree in there and they got Eden? Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu say, hey, don't touch that tree? You know, singling out that tree, that it's there, but don't go near it. And you could say, although I'm not sure you'd want to, but you could say that it was really part of the plan, this eating from the Eitz Hadat Tov V'ra, because it's what enabled people to choose. It's what enabled people to choose. And it was, the Shem Yishmuel tries to explain, that Tov and Ra are often not two distinct things, but they could be found in the same place. Tov and Ra can be found in the same place. And he quotes, the example he quotes, you can give tzedakah in a way that's Tov. You give tzedakah in order that people should benefit from what you can dispose of. But tzedakah could also be given for kavod, for honor, for being designated, for being spoken about, for being written about. That's also called tzedakah. Tzedakah, tov, at tzedakah, not so tov. So along came Adam and Chava, they ate from the Eitz HaDaat Tov Hara, and they were able to understand that there is such a thing, that there's Tov Hara. And the first thing that happened to Adam and Chava after they ate from the Eitz HaDaat was busha. They were embarrassed. And what is busha? Busha means you realize, they realized that they were liable to sin. They were liable to do something wrong, because they might not figure it out so well. They might be confused about how it really is. And yet, the challenge of Tov HaRa could only be met by a deeper understanding of what Tov is and what Ra is, and why you should cleave to Tov and stay away from Ra. You had to understand it. So this is what B'nai Yisrael, this is what's happening to B'nai Yisrael in Mitzrayim. They are given the opportunity to understand the difference between Tov and Ra, and to make the choice, to follow Moshe out of Mitzrayim. The Rashi says that not everybody was able to make that choice. Not everybody was able to live up to that standard. But Moshe Rabbeinu said, Choshech, we need the Choshech. And as I said before, in the third pasuk of the Torah, Vayom Elokim Yehi Or means that there is a light that comes beyond what we call daylight. It's the light of understanding. It's the light of awareness. It's the light that makes everything else pale by comparison, the light itself. So the light was put away, according to Rashi, according to Chazal, was put away for the tzaddikim. Only the tzaddikim could live with that light. You know, like sometimes you see somebody who's really good, you know, really good, really pure, really, and you say, well, it's not for me. I don't want to go near that person. I won't have anything to do with them. You know, he sets the bar too high. Or she sets the bar too high. I don't want to have anything to do with that. And that's, I think, if not a normal reaction, a reaction that happens to people from time to time. So that the tzaddikim, according to Rashi, they could live with the light. Or they could live with it. But no one else could. And no one else doesn't mean just wicked people. It means people who are not firm believers that God's plan will be successful. And so Rav Nachman said, what's happening in Mitzrayim is an ongoing challenge. I mean, it's a challenge forever. The challenge of having this bitachon, of knowing that the promise will be fulfilled, of being able to somehow find in that itself a relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. All of that, according to Rav Nachman, was what's happening in Tziat Mitzrayim. Tziat Mitzrayim is not a story about something that happened, but it's a story of something that's happening all the time and that will continue to happen, and that hopefully will be successful, in that everybody will be able to relate to the fact that God has promised and kept the promise, right? But that until the promise is kept, we express a belief that the promise will be kept. That's the remarkable idea behind all of this, and that's what's happened in Makat Choshech. Now, it's true that Makat Choshech, as I say, there are different ideas. There are different things that happen. There are bad things happen to the Egyptians, the bad things happen to the Jews, but it is quite remarkable that Rashi says that there's something bad happening to the Jews. But at the same time, Rashi says, no, but they went around to all the houses and they made a little catalog of the stuff that they're going to get when they leave Mitzrayim. So that means it was also good for the Jews. It was bad for the Jews, it was good for the Jews. Right? You had to have the Jews, the other Jews, the ones who were not making the catalog, and the ones who were not the Jews who were not dying because of their unclear thinking. So everybody had to make decisions. It's all happening for the Jewish people. They see it happening. They're the good guys and they're the bad guys. There are people who know what they're doing, people don't know what they're doing. So the people who are not committed, they have to commit. It's a remarkable kind of story that takes place here on behalf of the Rashi. And all of this is in the story of Makat Abakat Choshech, and okay, the theme of Tov Ra, as I told you, is more in the Shem Shmuel, which we will learn together in another year. Okay, yeah.
Egypt was that they had a kind of certainty, and then if you say that was a reverse plague, then it was kind of a reverse betochen, because the Egyptians, no matter what happened, were certain. They even went in. At the same time, then the Israelites, who should have had the betochen, were wavering, and then that kind of reversed in the sea, right? I mean, that's an unusual way to describe the background of the Egyptians as having such certainty.
I mean, as far as certainty is concerned, I mean, it's very hard to deny the certainty that the Egyptians had. Because there's no obvious act that could come from heaven that would change everything. Even though the Ramban at the end of the Parsha Bo, there's a very long Ramban at the end of Parsha Bo, he talks about the role of Yitziat Mitzrayim for the Egyptians. That the idea was to teach them this lesson of one God. But I don't think they learned it. The Ramban doesn't talk about that, but in Rav Nachman does talk about that. Tov. Good Shabbos.